Tommy McNeil. The U.S. Senate passed the nation's largest ever rescue package late Wednesday, a $2 trillion lifeline to suffering Americans, depleted hospitals, and an economy all ravaged by a rapidly spreading coronavirus crisis. The monster deal hammered out between Republicans, Democrats, and the White House includes cash payments to American taxpayers and several hundred billion dollars in grants and loans to small businesses and core industries. It also buttresses hospitals desperately in need of medical equipment and expands unemployment benefits. The measure cleared the Senate by an overwhelming majority and was headed next to the House of Representatives, which must also pass it before it goes to U.S. President Donald Trump for his signature. He has said that he plans to sign the bill. New York authorities are mobilizing to head off a potential public health disaster in the country's largest city as U.S. deaths from the coronavirus rise above 1,000, with New York's emergence as the nation's hotspot. A makeshift morgue has been set up outside Bellevue Hospital. The coordinator of the White House's coronavirus task force is warning New York cases could grow and is urging residents to follow public health recommendations. Meanwhile, in hard-hit Spain, lawmakers agreed to extending a state of emergency 2 more weeks for a full month. Scores of Mexicans braved long lines in the capital's first coronavirus drive-through testing station Wednesday. The idea was pioneered in South Korea with the idea to minimize face-to-face contact. The Asian country has been credited with flattening the curve for new infections. Drivers pull into a parking lot where they are met by health workers in protective suits. The individual's temperature is checked and samples taken for testing. This is VOA News. The man who committed the worst atrocity in New Zealand's modern history when he slaughtered 51 worshippers at two Christchurch mosques unexpectedly pleaded guilty to all charges on Thursday. The attacks targeting people praying at the mosque a year ago shocked the nation and prompted new laws banning the deadliest types of semi-automatic weapons. It also prompted global changes to social media protocols after the gunman live-streamed his attack on Facebook, where it was viewed by hundreds of thousands of people. The sudden turn in the case took survivors and relatives by surprise and brought relief to people across New Zealand. The U.S. government has concluded that retired FBI agent Robert Levinson, who vanished more than a decade ago, died while in the custody of Iran. His family and administration officials said this on Wednesday. The circumstances and timing of Levinson's death was unclear, but White House National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien said Wednesday evening that the U.S. believes Levinson may have passed away some time ago. Hours earlier, his family said information that U.S. officials had received had led them to conclude that he was dead, though it did not describe the nature of the information. The family said in a statement announcing Levinson's death that it was believed to have occurred before the recent outbreak of the coronavirus, which has gravely affected Iran. The Islamic State group has taken credit for an attack on a minority Sikh place of worship in Kabul Wednesday, killing at least 25 people, injuring 8 others. 4 suicide bombers attacked the place of worship. Afghan forces surrounded the temple and killed the 4 assailants and rescued 80 people who were trapped in the building at the time. And again, recapping our top stories, the U.S. Senate has in fact passed the nation's largest ever rescue package. It is a $2 trillion lifeline to suffering Americans, depleted hospitals, and an economy all ravaged by the rapidly spreading coronavirus. The deal was hammered out between Republicans, Democrats, and the White House. President Trump has said that he plans to sign the measure. It includes cash payments to American taxpayers. It has also several hundred billion dollars in grants, loans to small businesses and core industries. It also helps hospitals who are desperately in need of medical equipment. It also expands unemployment benefits. It cleared the Senate by an overwhelming majority. It now must head to the U.S. House of Representatives before it heads to President Trump for signing. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 26, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's president announces new coronavirus measures.
Effective Friday, 27th March 2020, there will be a daily curfew, and this shall be in effect in the territory of the Republic of Kenya, with all movement by persons not authorized to do so being prohibited.
Uganda's president Wednesday introduced new stricter coronavirus restrictions. Nigeria's main opposition leader wants the federal government to pay each Nigerian 10,000 naira for the coronavirus. Parties in the Libyan conflict respond to the coronavirus. Sudan's defense minister died in South Sudan's capital, Juba. And Liberian President George Weah makes a song about the coronavirus. Stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa.
No security, everything is possible.
The government of Kenya has imposed a daily curfew beginning tomorrow, Friday, until further notice, as yet another way to slow the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. Addressing the nation yesterday, Wednesday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta also asked Parliament to reduce the value-added tax from the current 16% to 14% effective April 1st to ensure economic stability. Marie Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
Kenya has been inventing measures since it recorded the first case of coronavirus 13 days ago. Speaking at State House Nairobi, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has asked the Treasury to reduce value-added tax from the current 16% to 14%, as those earning less than $240 are exempted from paying tax during this crisis period. Kenyatta also reduced civil servant salaries as a way of ensuring cash flow in the country.
A 100% tax relief for persons earning a gross monthly income of up to Kenya shillings 24,000. A B, reduction of the income tax rate or pay as you earn from its current maximum of 30% to 25%. My administration has offered a voluntary reduction in salaries of the senior ranks of the national executive as follows. The president and deputy president, 80%. Cabinet secretaries, 30%.
Kenya shall also hire more health officers to help in combating the coronavirus crisis. Mr. Kenyatta said that all Kenyans are not allowed outside as from tomorrow, Friday, 27th, from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m.
That effective Friday, 27th March, 2020, there will be a daily curfew, and this shall be in effect in the territory of the Republic of Kenya, with all movement by persons not authorized to do so being prohibited between these hours.
By yesterday, Wednesday, Kenya had recorded three more coronavirus cases, bringing the number of COVID-19 positive patients to 28 as one patient recovers from the virus. President Kenyatta has threatened to take stern actions if Kenyans will not adhere to the outlined measures imposed on them in fight against corona.
We have taken these basic measures to protect life, to protect the health of our citizens. If these measures are deemed to be inadequate, we shall, without hesitation, take even further and more drastic measures to ensure that the cardinal duty of the government and the state, which is the protection of life and property, is assured.
An economist, Ali Khan Sacho, warns that Kenya and other sub-Saharan African countries will undergo an economic crisis as they put up measures to curb the COVID-19 pandemic.
The economy has been crushed. Here in Kenya, demand for flowers is practically zero. Remittances are likely to slump quite sharply. You can imagine a lot of people are going to be laid off in our key remittance countries. And just generally, I think we're going into a recession not only in Kenya, but in sub-Saharan Africa.
Already, all the international flights to and from Kenya have suspended their services as by yesterday, Wednesday, midnight. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
following an increase in the number of people testing positive for the coronavirus, 15 to date. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni on Wednesday introduced new stricter measures aimed at preventing the spread of the disease. The president has banned the use of public transport and suspended the sale of non-food items in marketplaces. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala.
The new 5 corona cases were announced this Wednesday, including an 8-month-old baby whose father is reported to have traveled to Kenya recently, bringing the number of those who have tested positive in the country to 15. Uganda President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni said Wednesday evening that the government must come with policies aimed at preventing further spread of the disease.
The government has decided to suspend for 14 days now all public transport. And this means all taxis, all coasters, minibuses, all buses, all passenger trains, all tuk-tuks, the tricycles, and all the border-borders. These all are suspended.
The president also directed that those using private means of transport not to exceed 3, including a driver. He said this is aimed at ensuring that people keep a distance, a WHO recommendation in prevention of the spread of COVID-19 disease.
The markets should only be now for selling foodstuffs. And what we mean by food, matoke, sweet potatoes, cassava, rice, beans, cowpeas, groundnuts, beef, chicken, fruits, vegetables, etc. Food trading in the markets, other non-food items, is from now onward suspended.
The president did not give the timeline for the suspension of markets. He also said grocery shops and supermarkets should avoid overcrowding. President Museveni also tasked government institutions to find a way of reducing big numbers of staff in their offices.
Each ministry should work out a plan of the essential staff that need to remain on duty.
He also directed that all government vehicles, save for those of security forces, be used to transport medical personnel and supplies whenever in need. Uganda first announced a case of COVID-19 on Saturday last week. It was a 36-year-old Ugandan who had traveled to Dubai and was detected upon arrival on Entebbe International Airport. The government has consequently requested all persons who traveled to Dubai in the past 2 weeks to be screened of the coronavirus disease. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarind in Kampala, Uganda.
In Nigeria, the leader of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is proposing for the federal government of Nigeria to pay each Nigerian 10,000 naira, an equivalent of about $28, to help Nigerians survive the coronavirus lockdown. Atiku Abubakar, who was also the presidential candidate of the PDP in the 2019 election, has also pledged 50 million naira of his own money for the same purpose. PDP National Publicity Secretary Kola Olumbodiya says during the 2019 election, President Muhammadu Buhari's party distributed 10,000 naira to each marketer, calling it a palliative package.
His position is well received by Nigerians. And I say so because during the last election, during the campaign, the federal government of President Muhammadu Buhari went around open markets and were distributing 10,000 naira per marketers. And in spite of all criticisms, they explained it away as being a palliative for Nigerians in an election year. So today, the former Vice President Atiku Abubakar is of the opinion, and the opinion is very valid and generally acceptable among the ordinary Nigerians, that the federal government should be able to provide a palliative of 10,000 naira for at least an approximate 30 million households in Nigeria, because majority of Nigerians live on subsistence means. And one of the conditions of coronavirus to safeguard lives is social distancing, and total lockdown of faiths and communities. And on the face of this, not many Nigerians have the resources to provide for their means of livelihood outside their daily work and their daily pay.
How would this work? In other words, how would this money be distributed to Nigeria, say, 180 million citizens?
On the workability of the process, if it's acceptable to the federal government, majority of Nigerians who have joined the narratives are already of the opinion that the bank verification number should be used to process this money. After all, the same thing was done during the electionary campaign of 2019 when the vice president, Professor Yemi Osinbajo, went around markets in Nigeria, open markets, and was distributing 10,000 for marketers on the granddad and under the excuse that they were using the bank verification number to achieve the distribution of those funds.
The former vice president himself is a millionaire, so what is he willing to offer?
Well, the former vice president has put a sum of 50 million naira, which averages to $140,000, on the table as his own contribution. And I know that there are many Nigerians who will also be prepared to put various sums of money on the table.
Does the former vice president see a political opening in this coronavirus crisis?
The former vice president, Atiku Abubakar, from the onset, has been making proposals, has been canvassing in public places on how we can stem the tide of this coming scourge. And it is part of his belief that the impact can be reduced that has made him to come up with this novel proposal of ensuring that the ordinary people out there have their lives touched by government outside the high-fructose promises that the APC government is making to them.
Kola Olubodeya is the National Publicity Secretary of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party. You are speaking with us from Capital Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 26th. As the third day of fighting rocked the Libyan capital Tripoli on Wednesday, rival governments in the east and west of the country are stepping up their response to the coronavirus pandemic following the first reported case in the country. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Libyan fighter jets overflew the strategic Al-Watiya airbase near the capital, Tripoli, amid conflicting reports over which side now controls the area. Sporadic fighting also continued in the capital overnight as residents reported artillery shells falling in various parts of the city. The fighting came as the Tripoli-based National Unity Government reported the country's first confirmed case of the coronavirus. Health Minister Dr. Ahmed Mohammed Ben Omar urged Libyans to take precautions. He says the infected person was tested by Libya's National Center for Disease Control, and the health ministry is taking measures to care for the patient. He asks all Libyans to heed the ministry's health safety recommendations. Hatem Al-Uraibi, spokesman for the rival government based in Tobruk, told journalists that measures were being taken in eastern towns and cities to address the coronavirus crisis. He says equipment and medication to treat the virus have been sent to area hospitals and that a hospital was being readied in Benghazi to accommodate suspected victims. Meanwhile, areas in and around Tripoli experience what some residents were calling the worst fighting in the city since the fall of former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Video posted on social media showed black smoke rising into the air in the southern Tripoli district of Bou Saleem as forces loyal to the two rival governments tried to advance. Heavy fighting occurred at the western Al-Watiya airbase after a Tripoli-based commander tried to wrest it from forces loyal to eastern military commander General Khalifa Haftar. Both sides are claiming to control the base. Haftar's forces provided video on social media showing a Syrian mercenary whom they say was captured in the fighting. The man said in the video he was sent to Libya by the Turkish government, which pays his salary. Turkey backs the National Unity government, while Haftar's forces are backed by Russia and the United Arab Emirates. Fighting erupted in and around Tripoli 3 days ago after a coronavirus ceasefire broke down after being agreed to by both sides. It was not immediately clear which side was responsible for the renewed fighting. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Sudanese Defense Minister Lieutenant General Jamal al-Din Omar has died in Juba from heart attack. General Jamal was in the South Sudanese capital for Sudanese peace talks mediated by South Sudan President Salva Kiir. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei calls General Jamal's death today in Juba a tragic incident.
This morning, the people of the Republic of South Sudan and the government receive with shock and sadness the untimely passing on of the Sudanese Minister of Defense, General Jamal al-Din Omar.
Jamal was a member of the Sudan Sovereign Council, which took power under a 39-month power-sharing deal between the military and civilian groups after former President Omar al-Bashir was ousted from power last April. Mohamed Hassan Al-Taisi, spokesperson for the Sudanese government delegation at the peace talks in Juba, said in a statement that Jamal died of a sudden heart attack early Wednesday morning. Al-Taisi conveyed the government delegation's sincere condolences to the Sudanese people, their armed forces, and his gracious family. Jamal arrived in Juba last week to participate in talks about security arrangements between the Sudanese government and various opposition groups. Makwe says Jamal has been a great fighter and instrumental in the current peacemaking process in Sudan.
His unfortunate passing on is a great loss to the people of the Sudan and South Sudan.
The Sudanese government and several Sudanese rebel groups have been participating in peace talks since last August that have been mediated by top South Sudanese officials, including President Kiir. According to a statement released by the mediators, the parties are expected to complete the talks and sign a comprehensive peace deal next month. The talks have been focused on power sharing, security, and wealth sharing, among other things. The body of Jamal has been flown to Khartoum and was accompanied by the South Sudanese Minister of Defense, Angelina Teny, and the Minister of Investment, Diu Mathok, according to Makwei.
General Jamal is a well-known soldier, a patriot, and a committed individual to the peace in the Sudan. The government of the Republic of South Sudan passes its heartfelt condolences to His Excellency General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the Chairman of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, the government, and the people of the Republic of Sudan on his sad and unfortunate situation.
Jamal was named Defense Minister after Sudanese armed forces toppled former President Bashir following several months of mass protests against his 30-year rule. General Jamal was 60 years old. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
George Weah has made a song about the coronavirus. Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says President Weah wants to contribute to national awareness about the pandemic.
Actually, James, this is not President Weah's first time doing a song to champion a cause. Even as far back as when he was in Italy during the heat of the racism situation with African footballers and racism in general in Europe, he partnered with other African stars and they did a song, Lively Up Africa. Also, he did a song during our Ebola crisis. even when he wasn't president. The reason he did this song is that we have determined that community engagement, community awareness is the way to fight such an infectious disease. This pandemic can go away with the support of the community. So President Weah's song was to create awareness within the community so that we all can work together, follow the measures, and eliminate this scourge from our land.
It takes a long time, Mr. Minister, to make a song like this, for example, lyrics, arrangement, and then recording. So what do you say to those Liberians who say that the president is misusing the time that he should be using to govern the country?
President Weah is a workaholic. He gets up usually by 5 a.m. He spends an hour in the gym. And then between 6 to 6:30, he follows the news, makes some calls with some of his ministers. By 7, he's up and running, you know, with his several meetings, marathon of meetings, goes to his office, continue the meetings, coordinate things. There are times when he goes out into the field to interact with citizens. He has a very, very, very difficult routine. Yet, there are times when he carries out his passion, which is music, after football. So the president has a state-of-the-art studio that he constructed that is available to Liberian artists. So it wasn't a difficult thing for him to spend a few minutes every day in the studio to do this song in partnership with other Liberian artists. So it has not really taken away in any form from his daily schedule. By making this song, which creates awareness amongst Liberians, the president is contributing to the fight against the coronavirus.
Liberian Information Minister Eugene Nambo was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington. Hoping you have a great day.
African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.